Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Tuesday, where we discuss the Olympic sports at Boise State. Now here are Paul J. Schneider, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, Paul J. and Bob, along with Chris Walton this morning. And beach volleyball head coach Sean Garris is in. And we've opened up a six-pack of Maddie's and brought Osborne today.
Nice.
One of three, right?
That's
one
right.
One of three Maddie's on your team?
With what, about 10 people on the team, 12 people on the team? So
that's
pretty
right.
High percentage. So.
Yeah, the girls have thrown out the nicknames to help me try to sort out which Maddie is which. So although Maddie Osborne is not small, she is known as Little Mads on the team. Mm-hmm. And then Maddie O'Donnell is Big Mads. And then we have Mini Mads as our freshman. So, yeah, it's we need to stop recruiting Maddies.
I don't know. I look at who you got. Maddie Osborne,
well.
Maddie O'Donnell. I think you need to keep recruiting more Maddies.
Right. We need to focus on the same talent with a different name.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. So, Maddie Osborne, great season for volleyball in the fall. You guys are playing beach volleyball now. How different is the game for you to play?
I mean, for me, it's really different because indoor, I'm only a back row player. But on the beach, I get to play like front row. I get to hit the ball. I get to occasionally block, which is kind of fun. So it's a lot different.
Now, we've talked to Sean about this before, how good this is for your volleyball, I almost said straight volleyball players, for your indoor volleyball players, because when you play beach volleyball, you got to play everything.
That's right. So like Maddie was saying, you have to have a well-rounded game to be a good beach volleyball player. So although in the indoor game, she only plays in the back row as our libero, when she plays on the beach, if you pass, you're going to also have to be the hitter. And then you're going to serve every other time. And you're going to have to work with your partner to figure out how you're going to cover the whole court with only two people while you're moving in the sand. So there's great challenges, but it is still volleyball, and it is still developing our players and making them a better all-around player. And we get to play great competition. That's another huge benefit of having beach volleyball at Boise State. As you look at our schedule, we're going to Oregon, Cal, Stanford, UW. You know, that's great competition, where if we didn't have beach volleyball, we would be stuck playing the local teams in our spring season. It wouldn't help us prepare for the fall.
How do you guys decide who are partners with who? And I look at it, it's got to be Team Maddie. Maddie Osborne and Maddie O'Donnell have been playing number one. So how do you – you got, what, 12, 14 players on the team. How do you decide which two you want to pair with who? Maddie, how do you get Maddie as your partner?
I think for me it was really important because Maddie is a big and she can take the net and block the net, and I can play more back row when – in that situation. But for others, it's like we have some people who split blocks. One, they'll block half the time, the other person will block half the time. So it's like just kind of whoever you match up well with.
Yeah, and I also consider who's comfortable on the right side or the left side of the court, because you don't have to rotate in beach volleyball like you do indoors. So it just works really well that Maddie O'Donnell is a really comfortable right side attacker, does a really nice job with her ball handling, which allows her to move to the beach and be a really good all-around player, where indoors she's a middle blocker that focuses her skills in the front row, but the beach game is suitable for her talents overall. And her and the two Maddies playing together was something that was kind of in the works since the season ended last year. We knew those were two really competitive kids that had experience playing near the top of the lineup, and I think they both make each other better.
So it's not just – I just thought it would be a front liner and a back liner.
Not always.
Not particularly.
Not always. And our roster doesn't give us that many options to have front line and back line. So sometimes, like Maddie said, we have pairs that will split blocking depending on who's serving. But we do keep an eye on indoors when we're out there training in the sand, and we want to be aggressive and we want the skills to cross over. So we do try to hit probably a little bit more than other teams and definitely like to play the net.
Maddie, had you ever played before this experience? I mean, you're from Nampa, so it's not like you go to the beach. Some of the players live in Southern California, may have had experience doing it. Had you ever done it before Boise State?
Definitely not competitively. I've played, like, pickup volleyball in the sand, but, like, not very competitive, and definitely not doubles in the sand.
We're talking with Maddie Osborne and, of course, Sean Garris, beach volleyball coach of Boise State. It's 8:44.
Now back to Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. Sean Garris, Maddie Osborne with us from BSU beach volleyball. Maddie, playing in the sand, good for your conditioning? You always see people running in the sand. It's not easy to run in the sand.
No.
What's the concentration? How hard is the sand you play on? Is it easy to move around or is it hard to move around?
It definitely depends on where we're playing because I think we're more comfortable in our sand at our home like court. But definitely when you go like on the beach and actually play like, on right by the ocean, it's definitely harder to move. But yeah. It's really hard to move compared to indoor. Like you get stuck a lot.
Sean, kind of following it up, in baseball, sometimes you can wet the infield down to yeah. slow somebody's speed. Can you kind of change things and play with it if you're the home team?
Not intentionally. It's more just the grains and the sand. They did a great job building the facility at Boise State. The sand came from a mine out in Emmett, mm-hmm. and it's washed sand. It's really clean. It's a great surface to play in, but it's hard to replicate what the beach is because there's unlimited depth when you get close to the ocean, where ours is about 18 inches deep. And so a player like Maddie moves really well out there. We have other players that look like they're in quicksand. So it's different for everybody. But the courts also tend to get bowled out a little bit, and so you really have to get comfortable playing the game. It's not an easy adjustment.
Afternoon, the matches are going to take place on Friday, and that's the biggest yeah. reason we have you guys in here today. Day. Why don't you explain where they are? Because I know people that come to the regular matches during the season, you know where Bronco Gym is, but maybe they've never been to beach volleyball. Right. Where is it?
Yeah, the courts are on campus, and they're on kind of a growing section of campus. If you go to the corner of University and Lincoln, there's Lincoln Garage is right there. A lot of people know that landmark. Beside Lincoln Garage, there's a rec field and the Honors College dorm building that they're building, and we are just south of that. And so it's a block away from Lincoln and University. It's not too hard to find. And it's free parking out there. It'll be free admission, and you're welcome to bring your lawn chair and come sit out there. You might need an umbrella on Friday. It looks like we might get a little bit wet, but we'll play in rain. We play in wind. Girls learn to play in really difficult conditions. Mm-hmm. The sport is definitely designed to be outdoors, and girls are geared up for practice. When we do go out there, they look like scuba instructors. They've got sand socks and leggings and tights, and you know they're dressed to play out in warm in cold conditions and still be warm. And Friday, temperature-wise, it looks fine. We just might get a little precipitation.
And I just want to echo what you said about the lawn chairs. We have them. We brought them. That's definitely the way to go if you have something like
that. Yeah, it's actually a great spectator venue. There's a grassy hill on one side. You'll be able to see the two courts playing. And the courts will be going nonstop from about 12 to 6 because Oregon and SAC will play each other at 12 before we play SAC at 2, and then we'll play Oregon at 4. So it'll be nonstop volleyball out there.
Okay, back to the sand.
Yeah.
Beach sand or sand trap sand?
ours is a lot closer to beach sand. There's no rocks. There's no large pebbles in there. It's really clean wash sand. It's really soft on your feet.
So if it does start to rain, though, the match is nonstop. You just keep,
yeah.
you keep
yeah,
playing.
Yeah, the courts were built with really good drainage in mind, so the mm-hmm. water seeps down and then disappears out the back. So the facility's done really well.
Maddie, what's the worst weather you've ever played in?
I think last year we actually played in some hail mm-hmm. and yeah. like wind, and then so that was pretty rough. But
yeah, it was pretty cold when we were at Stanford last year. It rained most of the day. You have to protect the balls, make sure they don't get waterlogged, and it starts to get really heavy and it's bad on their shoulders. But yeah, you can play through everything except lightning.
What kind of scouting do you guys do? I know you guys do extensive scouting when you play in the indoor season, but do you know like the team, the pair that's going to play for Oregon or Sac State?
Yeah, we don't spend as much time on the scouting and the tactics for the beach season as we do indoors. We don't want to stress the girls too much. We want to go out there and play and compete. Mm-hmm. Indoors, we're so tuned into who we are and how we're going to beat other teams. We watch video, and I think they understand tactically how we're going to overcome the obstacle. But on the beach, it's a two-person game, and the two people have to communicate a lot during the game. The coaches cannot actively coach during the plays, mm-hmm. so the girls really have to communicate with each other and figure stuff out. And so we try not to put too much in play from a tactical mm-hmm. perspective. We just let them figure it out, like who do you want to serve, you know, which player do you want to pick on, and what's her best shot, and how are you going to score points.
I was going to say, you see them huddling all the time, yourself and whoever your partner would be in the match.
Yeah, I feel like we're talking about, like, their tendencies, like if the right side likes to go cut shot or, mm-hmm. like, wrist away, and, like, if we're going to take, like, the block, or if we're going to take the line or the angle on the block, and where we're going to defend that ball, so.
I'm sure a lot of it gets changed as the match goes along.
Absolutely, and we don't see these teams regularly, so it's hard to know, like, that the ones pair, like Maddie and Maddie, are going to play who from Oregon. We don't really know that until it's time. So they focus on what they can control on their own side, and then they figure out the tactics within the match as they play.
It's the only home match.
That's right.
The only home beach volleyball match. So this is it. come out and see him this weekend or don't see him.
That's right. The next time to watch the Boise State team in action won't be until September when we're playing indoors.
Indoors, yeah. Mm-hmm. So
what do you got on
no
the schedule?
No conference championship, yeah. No conference.
No. We're an independent in beach volleyball, so we just build a schedule as competitive as we can make it. And I think that's going to keep growing for years to come because the sport is blowing up. I think there's close to 70 Division I schools now that sponsor beach volleyball. So it is really growing, and we're one of the few out west that is not in a conference because the WCC, the Big West, and the Pac-12 all have beach volleyball in their conference now.
How many of them out west play?
There's three. San Jose, New Mexico, and Boise are the only three right now.
Do you see more?
There's a lot of talk. I think when we win the conference, some people go, is it because of you adding beach volleyball? And I don't think it is directly, but indirectly, it's about just getting better on our campus. And our players are committed. They're working hard. They're getting better year-round.
Okay, we need to take a break. It's 8:52.
Now, back to Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI.
It's 8:54. We're talking with Coach Sean Garris and Matty Osborne from the beach volleyball team. Matty's a junior. Are you the only Idahoan on the team?
No, we have another one from Boise. She went to Bishop Kelly.
That's Emily Sullivan, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty high percentage of two on the team.
And you know what? On our beach lineup, Matty Osborne plays on the ones team and Emily Sullivan plays on the twos team. Mm-hmm. So, pretty cool.
That's good. Hi, was it difficult? I'm looking at your schedule. You talked about Washington. You play them on consecutive days later this month. You go to Stanford. You go to you play Cal at Stanford. Play Oregon at Stanford in one big meet. You play Oregon over here this weekend. Hard to get those schools on the schedule? Or were they looking?
The teams in the Northwest, we work together to make sure we give each other the matches. And we try to rotate who's going to host that. So this will be the third time we've played Washington. It's the fourth year in a row we've played Oregon, and then picking up an extra match against Oregon down at Stanford is just, hey, we're both going to be there. Let's play. So for us, we want to play the best competition we can find, and playing Pac-12 teams that have sponsored the sport for years is really good competition for us. Kind of tells us where we're at in the indoor game as well.
Looking to the fall, any good matches non-conference wise you've got scheduled to come here?
Yeah, we're going to open the season down at Arizona State for a tournament, which would be really nice for our senior outside, Sierra Nobly. She's from Arizona, so getting her home for her senior year will be a lot of fun. We're going to host the second weekend. We have BYU coming and still working to fill out that field. And then the fourth weekend we're going to host, and Oregon State's coming over here. So we should have some good matches in preseason designed to prepare us for a tough Mountain West schedule.
All right, guys, thanks for stopping by. Best of luck this weekend. Once again, matches on Friday and Saturday. So get
just Friday.
Oh, just Friday. I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong month here. Yeah, just on Friday. So be out there, Oregon, Sac State, and Boise State. Idaho Talks Live coming up after a news break at the top of the hour.
If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, Paul J. and Chris, News Talk 670. KBOI, Destiny Slocum, transferring. We ordinarily don't do sports, but transferring from Maryland.
One of the best basketball players from
NCAA Freshman of the Year nationally.
From this area. And went to the university. Yeah, probably. Went to the University of Maryland. And now wants to leave, I guess.
Yep, she's going to leave. No word on where she's going to transfer. But she will sit out next year, and everybody's going, for some reason, I just thought she would transfer to Washington because I know they recruited her.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she didn't like the East Coast. It's funny that last year or the year before, I can't remember which, Maryland also lost a very good freshman point guard. Something about point guards that I don't like. I don't know what it is. Anyway, Destiny Slocum transferring. That's the biggest local sports this morning.
I would imagine so.
Women still only earn a fraction of what men get paid. If it's a high-paid job, chances are there's not a woman doing it. That's a conclusion of a LinkedIn analysis prepared for Equal Pay Day, which is today, on how women fared in the top 100 highest-paying jobs in the U.S.
Let's go back to the 40s and 50s.
Okay.
And it was
generally the riveter.
Yeah, it was generally kind of thought at that time that the man was supposed to work and the woman was supposed to take care of the house, you know, in a marriage and in a family.
Yeah,
that was just kind of the tradition. That's the way it went. And of course, a lot of women went to work, and every year more and more women got into the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you know, I've even seen old films where they ask somebody, you know, how come the women in your workplace make so much less than the men? And they're told, well, the men need to make more because they're men.
The women don't really need the money.
Yeah, because they can get their husband to do. Well, I mean, it's 2017 now. It's not 1947 anymore. So 70 years past that.
My mother worked almost all the time.
Most women do work now.
Yeah.
And most of the jobs that they do, they can do just as well as anybody else. So why is the pay level still lower?
Yeah. My dad was in. He kind of picked a profession where he didn't make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom, I don't know this for 100%. I'm pretty sure she out-earned him, especially later on. Mom, I mean, she worked all the time. She was one of those people who lied about her age to get a job, you know? Because, by God, we're not hiring any women over 40. So magically, my mom became 37. I mean, it worked, you know.
And what were you about this time, 32?
Yeah. I was 41. Yeah.
It's a miracle.
Anyway, women in the top 100 highest-paying jobs in the U.S. make up less than 30% of employees in each role. Among the highest-paid roles, only three of them employ more women than men, all human resource jobs.
If you show me, I mean, and I've never seen this before. I don't even know, you know, what the people around here make.
Mm-hmm.
But if you showed me a chart of everybody's salary, I mean, a lot of things on there would probably make sense. Like somebody with more experience, somebody who was, you know, harder to recruit, somebody who's in a position of more authority, more responsibility. You know, someone whose decisions can make or break things, and so, you know, they have a high-paying job. However, it wouldn't make sense to me to see that there were people with the same amount of experience in the same job making completely different amounts
of
money.
Having exactly the same credentials.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is hard to find.
But apparently there are still some companies where that's just kind of the way it goes. I mean, you know, men make a certain salary and women make like four-fifths of that.
How is it here?
See, I don't know. I don't know. You mean like here in town?
No, here at this radio.
Oh, here at the radio station? I don't know. I honestly don't ever find out what anybody makes.
Yeah, it's none of our business, but it's kind of.
But in radio, traditionally, like most radio stations have like five or six guys and one female.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like TV.
Yeah.
Well, there's more on TV now. I would imagine Dee Sarton probably makes. I don't know. Think she makes more than Mark?
I have no idea. Mark left and came back, but he does have a lot of, you know, experience.
Well, and changed jobs, basically.
Well, yeah, true,
reinvented himself.
He was the sports anchor, and then he became the news anchor.
Yeah. When I was in TV, women were paid less than men, and there was always, like, a reason for it.
Or a justification or a rationalization anyway.
When I first went into the television business, you had to have a four-year degree from a university.
Right.
That all changed when people started putting women on the air.
Well,
because the women that went on the air for us, none of them had a degree.
None of them even had gone
to college.
But even in Boise, Idaho, they had gender quotas, and there were racial quotas.
Right.
And so it's like you said, everybody was looking for somebody that was mixed race and female, so they could check off a whole bunch of different categories.
Yeah, the big joke was to hire a woman who was half Chinese and half Mexican and had an African surname, if there is such a thing. So you could kill like three birds with one stone.
And was also Jewish or something.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, so you could kill like three birds with one stone.
Yeah.
But it used to be that way. Everything used to be on the quota. I don't think it is anymore.
In some businesses, it still is, especially in some of the larger cities and some of the states where they have more of a mixture than we do here in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Idaho, it's not like it was even 20 years ago, but it's still more than 90% white.
Yeah, it is. The disparity is pronounced in the upper echelons of tech leadership, where females are underrepresented as chief technology officers. 5% is all of women. Vice president of engineering, 5%. And director of system engineering, 7%.
And if you go back far enough, engineering was not a field that very many women went into.
Exactly. The STEM program has tried to move them toward that recently. Today's Equal Pay Day, which is the date that U.S. working women's pay catches up to men's from the prior year. Women on average are paid 20% less than men in the U.S., according to the Institute for Women's Policy Research.
Mm-hmm.
The gap is wider for women of color. Black women, 37% less. Hispanic women, 46%.
Let's say that you have an accounting office, and so naturally you're going to hire some CPAs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you have different candidates that have about the same experience, and you hire maybe two people, one a man, one a woman. Do you immediately just give him a higher salary than you give her?
Same credentials?
Now, I can see where the boss could say, well, he's larger and he can lift more. Yes, but they're accountants. That doesn't matter in that job.
No, you shouldn't. I mean, you absolutely shouldn't. Do you? I don't know.
I mean, if you're bucking hay, yeah, you need somebody who can lift a lot.
Exactly. Been there, done that, don't like it.
Well, yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. The tech industry growing at a breakneck pace. All I know is my wife and my daughter both make great money.
That's good.
Yeah. Far more. Well, my daughter makes far more than I made at her age. But, times are different.
Well, yeah.
Pays different.
Yeah,
whatever.
Exactly.
I was trying to think if my wife makes more than. Probably. We have a business, and her salary can kind of be raised or lowered.
It fluctuates.
With the profit from the business.
Exactly.
Kind of a thing. But she makes good money, but she owns like three businesses. I mean.
Well, and she's not in a position.
That energy.
She's not in a position where she's working for somebody else in a field where, it's her and then a couple of men, and they're both making more money than she is.
Well, everybody.
But there are a lot of women who are in that situation, and if they went to their boss and said, I think this ought to be more equal, the boss would probably just give them something about, I don't think it should be.
Everybody in her business? Female.
Yeah.
All females. KBOI News Time, 9:16.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
It's Equal Pay Day.
Well, I think this is the day that...
It's 20%.
This is how it works. As if a woman and a man have the exact same job... That she would make nothing from January 1st until today, and he would make his regular salary, and then for the rest of the year, they'll make the same. But she's going to miss out basically on about 3 months' pay.
Yeah, or the way they do it, it's wound around from last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you're 3 or 4 days into the 16th month. Rewards code, pay. As in equal pay, P-A-Y.
Right.
So go to 670kboi.com, enter pay, and earn today's 5,000 rewards points.
Let's see. I got an instant message here. This is from Brett. He says, how do kids and their activities play a role in this? Do women tend to leave work earlier to get to games and school activities? Is it possible that on average men work longer? If that is true, then it makes sense as to why men might bring home more and that the pay gap is not really as presented. I could be wrong, but it should be considered. FYI, I value women and my wife works hard as well. Thanks for the time. And that's Brett. I think, though, the way the statistics are kept it's based on the number of hours you work compared to, so how much does it come down to that you're making per hour, not how much it comes down to that you make overall based on how much work you've done.
Yeah, it's per hour.
Because like in something like sales where you're paid on commission. The person who sells the most is going to make the most money, and that doesn't matter whether that person's male or female.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about just, a regular job where you get a salary, and assuming that you go ahead and work a 40-hour week, possibly more.
The way he approaches the wage gap, if you will, mm-hmm. is kind of the way it was approached for a long time. We can't pay as much because if your son has a baseball game, you're going to go.
If you have a sick child, you'll be the one that goes home.
And
mothers,
you're planning on having any more babies.
Mothers have to do everything.
And all of that kind of stuff.
Mothers have to do everything.
Yeah.
And then, like at work, that turns out to be a detriment.
Yeah. That's changing, though. Don't you think it's changing? And I know my job is, and your job, I mean, we're done by noon.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if there's ball games to be seen or, in your case, concerts to go to or whatever, we're free.
Yes. As I've said, my son plays for Capitol. He plays trombone for Capitol.
Exactly. I mean, for years, I worked in the morning. My wife took Natalie to daycare,
mm-hmm.
and then I picked Natalie up from daycare.
Yeah.
Took her to the horse races with me.
Exactly.
My wife came out, got her at the horse race. I mean, it was a constant teamwork thing, which really ended up, and that's the way mm-hmm. I think it's evolving into that
instead of
women have to do everything.
Parenting probably should be more tag team than just leaving it all up to, one party.
I agree. All right, KBOI News Time, 9:26. You're listening to Idaho Talks Live.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
I'm just going to sit here till Chris's arm gets tired playing the drums that fast.
Glad you explained that.
Yeah, thank you. 9:36. Did you see where Chelsea Clinton said that she doesn't think Hillary's going to ever run again?
Well.
Because she doesn't have
She's
any
probably
tennis
right.
shoes.
Well, yeah, exactly. Back in November, I didn't get the feeling that she was terribly pleased with the entire campaign.
No. The younger Clinton appeared this morning on CBS this morning to promote her new book, It's Your World, Get Informed, Get Inspired, and Get Going. The conversation, of course, veered toward her mom.
Do what I say.
They asked her if she thought her mother would run. She said, I have no idea. I don't think so. I think right now she's focused on her book. She's focused on her grandchildren. She's focused on what she can do to help support work she's been engaged in.
Yeah. Definitely focused on some fairly lucrative speaking engagements.
Yeah. She recently said, Hillary, that she wants to come out of the woods. Chelsea interpreted this as her mother wanting to encourage people to remain engaged and continue supporting progressive causes and organizations such as Planned Parenthood. When asked whether she thought Russia interfered with the election and prevented her mother from winning, Clinton replied that she believed there are still many questions surrounding the situation.
Yeah.
And said we deserve
translated. Translated, yes.
Yeah. this is so funny to me because both sides, the winning side, the Republicans, and the losing side, the Democrats, are both still squabbling over the election, which has been over for 100 days. Or
true.
Longer than that. It's been over
if you listen to the various people talk about it, the Democrats usually are coming up with some point about, okay, we need to investigate this, and this came up. And actually, it was the president himself that kept bringing up that the Russians had something to do with the election, which is a weird thing for the winner to bring up, but still, he brought it up.
Yep.
And so, you know, the Democrats say, well, let's check this out. We want to make sure that, you know, our elections are still fair, and assuming they ever were. And the Republicans are saying, well, you're only doing that because you're mad you lost. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I'm sure maybe some of them are mad they lost, but I think the reason they're investigating it is because if Russia is interfering in pretty much anything we do in America, that seems like a fairly important thing.
Well, why are the Republicans mad? They won.
Why are they mad?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're mad because they wanted to win, but not with Trump. You know, a lot of Congress still, like, for instance, Raul Labrador last week. I mean, he didn't bother. He met with Trump, but didn't bother to do what Trump asked him to do.
Yeah.
And he said he didn't bother with it because, number one, he wanted Obamacare to be repealed completely. And he said this wasn't doing it. It was just making it just a slightly smaller version of Obamacare. And that wasn't enough. So come up with something better than that. And that's what Raul and that entire Freedom Coalition said.
But see, that's the kind of pressure that, well, partially Trump put it on himself. But, you know, he put that 100-day deadline and did all of that stuff.
Well, and then the next thing he did after that, the next thing he did, Trump, is he said that some of these guys who didn't support the Republicans' health care bill, you know, can expect quite a fight when it comes to the primaries in 2018, which is, it's not even a veiled threat. That's just a threat.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to make sure that you guys don't win office again. However, despite the fact that he is president of the United States, Trump doesn't have that much goodwill
in the Republican Party as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't. He probably doesn't have nearly as much influence in some of these congressional districts as he thinks he does.
Yeah. Senator Rand Paul, who played golf with Ian, and here's Trump just getting on Obama for all the golf he played.
Right.
Trump plays a lot more golf than Obama played.
True.
Anyway, he played golf with Rand Paul the other day, and apparently they talked about Obamacare.
Rand Paul was on TV for a little bit this morning.
Yeah,
and it was kind of non-Rand Paul like because he was just praising everything Clinton has accomplished so far, or not Clinton, but Trump has accomplished so far.
Yeah. Well, Senator Paul said yesterday, President Obama's former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, there's a blast from the past, should testify on new reports.
Well, her name's coming up.
That she sought to unmask the names of President Trump's transition officials caught up in surveillance. Paul on Twitter called the reports on Rice a smoking gun. It was reported by The Hill.
Well, and here's the focus.
Yeah.
With the whole Russian situation, the Republicans are focused on, you know, who leaked this information from the U.S. government? You know, who let the Russians know about this? Who did that? Who told the press about this secret thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Democrats are more concentrating on right now, okay, who in our government is corrupt?
Yeah.
Who in our government is making deals with Russians behind everybody's back? And I don't know what you think is more important, the malfeasance or somebody telling on you.
It's we've sunk to this.
But it's only an assumption that there's malfeasance in the first place.
Because
there are a lot of people, yes, there are a lot of people in the current administration who have had dealings in Russia. But then again, we're talking about a lot of multimillionaires and billionaires who have dealings in just about every country in the world.
Correct. Paul was referring to reports by Fox News, Bloomberg, and others that Rice sought to disclose the Trump associate names. Those names are apparently sent to members of the National Security Council and the heads of the CIA and National Intelligence. Fox News reported yesterday the names were part of an incidental electronic surveillance of candidates and President-elect Trump and people close to him, including family members, for up to a year.
Well, okay, and
before he took office.
Here's the deal. Apparently, they surveil a lot of people, especially a lot of foreigners.
Yeah.
Some in this country, and some, you know, wherever they can find them. And they tap their phones. They look at what they're doing on the internet and pay attention to it. And it's perfectly legal because these are not U.S. citizens. So they're actually they're spying on what could be spies. But the spies talk, and they talk about all sorts of things. And one thing occasionally that comes up is they talk about U.S. personnel, and sometimes they mention, you know, I met that guy, and he's really keen to do this or this or this or act on our behalf or something of that nature. And despite the fact that the CIA doesn't publicize that and give names and stuff, they do certainly make note of it.
Yeah.
And so, yes, a person can be inadvertently surveilled.
Yeah. When names of Americans are incidentally collected, they're supposed to be masked, which means the name or names are redacted from reports, whether it's in international or domestic collection, unless it's an issue of national security, of crime, or their security was threatened in any way. There are loopholes and ways to unmask through back channels, but Americans are supposed to be protected from incidental collection. Sources told Fox News, in this case, they were not.
Yeah, and that's all very official, you know, and you can't publicize what you've heard there, but you also can't unhear it.
Good point.
So somebody always knows something about somebody.
Paul called for stronger limits on unmasking people in the political process. He said he is considering legislation on unmasking in response to the Rice reports. KBOI News Time, 9:45.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
I was just flashing back. There was a news guy in there when we were playing the news theme like this, and he ran up to the window and shook his head no and was waving us off with his hands.
Oh, yeah, because he wasn't ready yet.
He wasn't ready yet.
That was about 12 or 13 years ago. I remember that.
The news theme's playing. You got to be ready.
Exactly.
He's going, no, 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 I'm not ready. He didn't last long. Plenty of Republicans across Capitol Hill that see the GOP plans to repeal and replace Obamacare as a settled issue, at least for the moment. But behind the scenes, several key players are not letting the issue go.
Paul Ryan this morning
especially Paul Ryan.
Yeah, Paul Ryan said this morning, we're going to come up with a different plan than we had a couple of weeks ago, and you're all going to love it, and we're going to get that done as quickly as possible.
He took a lot of blame, though, didn't he, for the failure of it. Trump kind of...
Well, they let's put it this way. They went in 1 week from calling it Obamacare to calling it Trump Care to calling it Ryan Care.
Yeah. Conversations.
Or scapegoat care. I don't know.
Yeah. Here are the two key issues, according to the new Ryan, whatever you want to call it. Two key issues: repeal of essential health benefits and repeal of existing community ratings provisions. A straight repeal of these two items remains an almost impossible sell.
Why does the repeal
to
of
the broader conference?
Why does the repeal of essential benefits sound like such a bad idea? I think it must be that word essential.
Yeah, because it's like you need this to live. So they're trying to figure out a way to massage it in a way to appease both poles of the Republican Party. One idea being kicked around is to provide more authority to the Health and Human Services Secretary to give states the ability to make these changes on their own. My question is this going to cost the states money? Are we going to pay stuff that's now covered by feds?
Good question.
Yeah.
A lot of times, even if it is a state choice, you know, the feds will match funds.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's going to happen here.
After meeting Pence, Freedom Caucus Chairman Mark Meadows said his group was intrigued by the idea of giving states more flexibility to opt out of Obamacare regulations.
Have you seen a lot of
using waivers?
Have you seen a lot of those town hall meetings that they've been showing just parts of? Some of them they have been completely on C-SPAN, and others of them they just show part of them on CNN. There are people that are showing up who voted Republican, who always have, who voted for Trump. And they're complaining because they're basically poor people, and they were told that...
Where's all the stuff we used to get for nothing?
Yeah, they were told that the worst thing in the world is this Obamacare, and you got to vote for us to get rid of Obamacare. And so they were carrying signs that said, get rid of Obamacare. And then they started interviewing these people and saying, what don't you like about Obamacare? Oh, it's all socialists and blah, blah, and I hate Obamacare. Well, what have you got right now? Well, we're under this program. And then the gal says, well, you realize that is Obamacare. So it's Obamacare that's actually paying for your medical expenses right now. And the people look at her like, no, we didn't know that. We thought they were different because they thought the because it was called Obamacare.
They look at her and go, shut up.
Yeah, they thought the Affordable Care Act was something that
different.
Was, they liked that because it had the word affordable in it. But then Obamacare just had the word Obama in it, and so they didn't like that.
Yeah.
And now they're finding out that, wait a minute, you're trying to get rid of that thing that's paying my medical expenses?
Exactly.
I'm gonna switch to no.
Yeah.
But the guys are still saying, well, I'm sorry, but in November we were elected after promising to do certain things, one of which was to repeal Obamacare. So regardless of how many people show up and say, no, it's absolutely necessary for me to stay alive, they still say, no, we promised to get rid of it, and we're going to get rid of it.
Yeah, that's what you wanted. It's what you got.
Even if you changed your mind.
Now, basically, Trump said healthcare on a back burner for now, right? There remains a significant skepticism about whether something can come out of the talks among top GOP aides or what kind of timeline any deal would work under. House Ways and Means Chairman Kevin Brady, one of the authors of the healthcare bill, has made clear that his committee has moved on to tax reform, as was requested by President Trump and announced by Ryan the day healthcare collapsed. But Brady did tell reporters yesterday his team is serving to monitor and assist in the ongoing talks and has been asked to help on both policy and technical questions about healthcare. So,
which I guess is fine.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing has become increasingly clear in the wake of the healthcare collapse, that's rank-and-file members are in large part desperate to find a way to get the conference to yes something. be it tax reform.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Come on, people, we have to pass something here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We're treading water, which happens a lot in Washington.
Once in a while, no change is better than change.
We've said that for years. Don't need a new law. Don't need to change the old one. It's there. KBOI News Time, 9:56. See you tomorrow.